the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, Tom Allen. I think he's telling everybody right now where we're at in the game. Just have a little patience, folks. Have a little patience. We're going to get this crop out.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there. Hey, Tom.
Hey, good morning, y'all. How are
that
you?
That was a phenomenal entry, man.
I don't know that I'd go phenomenal.
No, dude, that was cool.
Too many miles on a road, too many times just sitting in the truck by yourself, and you can play around with whistling or in the field late in the evening.
Hitting the mid-tones, man, that's good.
When you started walking those streets, it was pretty humbling.
Strong. I think you call it strong.
Strong.
Fierce is what these little kids would call it. Fierce. That's what my kids would say.
Not
fierce.
The herbicide. Fierce. The mentality.
That's right. Fierce.
Well, guys, look, we got Tom in the studio today. By his excellent musical stylings, we entered into the day with a little patience. So if y'all have been looking at Twitter and watching Twitter and seeing Tom with his rants about all his diseases that are showing up in soybean fields, y'all be glad to let him talk about it today instead of looking at it pictorially. So
Tom, I mowed the yard the other day, and man, there had to have been like four or five different mushroom, fungus, whatever things that I made.
Fairy rings he was talking about.
And these weren't even fairy rings. You know, some of them were like around stumps. I mean, they were obvious, and then some of them were just seemingly completely random. So, yeah, it's like a big petri dish out there right now, huh?
Completely. That's always my favorite part of this year is just add a little bit of water, and things kind of start to grow.
It's like Kool-Aid. Mix it up and let it change colors.
Include the mosquitoes. So I guess mosquitoes come from the same place fungi do.
I wouldn't go that far, no. Man. No, but the water, absolutely. And that's kind of, I would say for the first few weeks of the season, I was disappointed and disgruntled. Nothing to look at. Then you kind of wait a little bit longer and things kind of blossom or bloom, for lack of a better word, including the mosquitoes.
So it's what they say in the Delta, if you don't like the weather, wait a while, it'll change.
Right, so, Tom, you're looking at all the crops, and naturally most of the corn's out. So what's the biggest thing that we're dealing with right now? And I know most everything's done, but, I mean, I know you're still running the roads looking at things. So give us an update.
Still getting some questions. You know, the whole seed quality thing, lots of people have concerns about that, and that is a really difficult animal to wrap your head around. And I don't know that we've had enough rainfall or moisture for the catastrophic type of pod rot / seed quality issues that we had in 2009. Nice thing is when the sun comes back out, that kind of helps. When it stays warm and it dries things out and you don't end up with that cloud cover for extended periods of time and all the wet weather that we had in 2009, there are still some leaf spot things picking up, a lot of target spot again this year in soybeans, and there was some in cotton as well. So that wet weather, I think, that we ran into late July, early August, that certainly wasn't as long elongated as it was in 16 and 17. That definitely played into a lot of that. The other thing that's been a pretty interesting thing to look at this year, I have now made it around to all the soybean OVTs to this point. And I think I have a little bit left at Verona to look at. But it took me a few weeks to really wrap my head around some of the root and lower crown and stem issues that we were seeing in a lot of soybean production fields. And I'm still running across a tremendous amount of southern blight, which, interestingly enough, and I have spent a good bit of time putting pictures on Twitter, looking at things, trying to collect cultures for folks from other states, and maintain some of those things kind of in our lab to see maybe what direction we might need to go next year. But that has been a southern blight which is caused by Sclerotium rolfsii. You also get that in peanut as well, and they'll call it a whole bunch of things.
So that's why we don't usually rotate peanuts and soybeans, right?
Number one reason we don't suggest a peanut-soybean rotation, or soybean following peanut, or peanut following soybean, is because of Sclerotium rolfsii, because that particular fungus goes to both plants and can be quite devastating. And that's certainly something I think we've observed in some places this year, and we are still seeing some questions from some seed companies and consultants and a few other field-related personnel.
So in general, you know, not knocking on peanuts, but we don't grow a lot of peanuts in state. We grow a lot more soybeans. How devastating is that disease to a soybean crop? Is it something we really need to be worried about, or is it just kind of there?
I think right now it's just there, but I do think the concern amongst pathologists from other states over the last few seasons has been that that particular organism and the amount of southern blight that we've observed early in the season on some vegetative soybeans has been on the rise. And that's an organism that can overwinter and survive on residue, stay in a field for a period of time. And any of those particular fungi that produce a sclerotium, that is a hardened structure that can survive in the soil for a period of time that would probably get upwards 3 to 5 years. And that can definitely present a concern if you get the right environment, which obviously we've had this year.
Tom, is that the one you've shown the pictures of with the fungal growth on the stem?
That's right.
The lower stem.
You get a white fungal ropey growth at the base of the plant, the crown, along the stem. And then if you end up with the proper environment for a period of time, which is probably going to be related to hot and dry and a change in that, and then add some moisture to it, like we've been talking about, you'll get your reproductive production that forms those sclerotia.
But wouldn't there be a point after which the plant wouldn't be susceptible? So, for instance, if you're not, you know, still taking up a lot of water through the roots and moving nutrients up, wouldn't you be fairly safe from any effects of the disease?
Yes, absolutely. I think from a yield loss standpoint, you've reached a point in the season now where there's not going to be any yield loss for this particular crop. But the issue is you'll have reproduction of the fungus that then just creates an additional amount of inoculum that will stay in the soil
right
for next year's crop. So it could be an issue subsequent in the subsequent season.
That growth that's on the stem, even if you're, you know, it's late, your crop's done, you're just waiting to harvest, is there any actual stem rotting going on? And I'm thinking about the combine, you know, the sickle bar coming through there. Is it affecting harvest efficiency at all?
No, I don't think so. It's serving as a hardened structure, the plant, for it to just reproduce on and produce additional inoculum. So it's not going to be an issue for harvest efficiency, and there's certainly no concern about that for this season.
So what if it jumps on me early? What would the symptoms be, and what, you know, would I delay maturity? Would I, you know, delay pod set, different things like that?
Typically what you'll see early in the season, and this was certainly something we witnessed in 2018 as well, were early vegetative calls as related to southern blight and soybean, and it'll typically be 3 to 5 to 10 plants in a row that may die. Small little patches throughout a field. And in the past, and I would say based on the majority of the literature, most people like to suggest it was a bigger issue in silt loam soil classes. But I think in the years since I've been here, I've probably seen it more in the heavy clay soils, a bigger concern. But it doesn't relate to much yield loss, and it's always been considered a minor disease. But I think in the years that I've been in Mississippi, and even if you talk to some of the older plant pathologists, and I'd say Billy Moore would suggest he's never seen a situation where he thought that he could evaluate differences in varieties. And I think we will have a really good base of information from this season in particular as it relates to what may be more tolerant and what could be really susceptible to that particular organism, because there appear to be some pretty drastic differences.
So am I completely wrong in listening to all that? What I hear is it's real showy, but you don't need to worry about it.
Correct.
After a certain point in the season.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a big gap in the knowledge as to when that may not be a major concern.
Talking about that, when you don't need to worry about it, and knowing right now, if you look at the market and look at basis and where it's at, you're talking about sub $8 beans, somewhere in that seven to, let's just say, sub $8 beans. When do you stop pulling the trigger on something, especially fungicide? Generally, that fungicides and insecticides are two of the last things we're going to put on a soybean field. So if you got to cut your losses, when do you want them to stop spraying?
And I think that's a difficult question to answer. I think the base of information that we have suggests that that R3, R4 fungicide application is certainly the best timing to see a yield response, as either an automatic or if you get into a situation where you have some particular foliar diseases that occur. And there are instances where in the past few years we've looked at things as late as R5.5, but that would tend to be on frog eye leaf spot susceptible varieties. And that's typically when we saw some 10 to 13 bushel responses, even on some of those applications. But I think this didn't tend to be a real frog eye leaf spot susceptible environmental year. And most of the varieties that we have in our production system planted on the majority of our acres tend to be more tolerant to that particular organism.
How do you reconcile Bobby's question of when you should, or when you justify ceasing those fungicide applications with the desiccant application? Is there any incentive of maybe bumping up your desiccant application some in the interest of avoiding some problems with disease, or
spray a fungicide and don't desiccate if you're trying to save money? You know, you get to this point in the year, what's more important? Is it keeping the leaves green, or is that going to bring in a vector for disease, or is it, hey, let's get the leaves off as fast as we can and get this crop out of the field?
I think it depends on what the long-range forecast really shows. Right now, I think we're getting into a dry situation, but I think in a lot of cases, it's not so much harvest efficiency. People are struggling to cut multiple crops and also get their picker rolling if they're in a situation where they've got a cotton fields in addition to a couple of corn fields that they hadn't cut, and soybeans.
So you're saying it's not harvest efficiency, it's lack of combine.
That's right.
Efficiency. Capacity, not efficiency.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about that planting date all summer, man. I mean, that is something that has kept coming back up. You know, the fact that when it finally did get dry in late April, that we got a lot of acres planted in a variety of crops in a really short amount of time, and you got to get it all out too.
Well, and if you saw that line that was Sunday afternoon when we were leaving church, backed up almost all the way to, I don't know, where you get on Broadway at on 82. Man, that's a long way from Farmers Grain Terminal if you think about trucks being end-to-end that far back.
We stopped and got gas right there at the truck stop yesterday morning. They were six deep at the diesel pump coming back from the river.
So, I mean, we're getting a lot of stuff out fast, but you can only get it out so fast when you run out of trucks to put it in.
That's right.
You know, and I also think the majority of the complex of diseases, regardless of what crop you're talking about, it is a complex of diseases. You're typically not just going at one particular foliar disease if we talk just about foliar diseases. So if you take soybean, and mostly because we still have so many of those in the field, the nice thing is I think Northeast Mississippi probably has the youngest soybean crop that's there.
So youngest, give us, what do you think, growth stage?
They're probably R3 at this point.
Really?
And that's just a guess. And some of those places they replanted 3, 4, and 5 times.
So those boys up there got a long way to go.
They do still have a long way to go. And I think watching what the weather is going to do and take, you know, insecticide applications could still become a question up there. And again, that's not my area of expertise, but I think that's something to take into account. And certainly when you're considering foliage loss or foliage affected by, say, insects and plant diseases, which do you manage and which is more important to be most concerned about? It's not been a big soybean rust year. We've only seen a little bit in this state. And really, if it's going to be a little bit drier and it's not going to get wet, target spot doesn't necessarily become an issue, but frog eye is certainly one to still keep your eyes on. And I have not been up to Northeast Mississippi in several weeks at this point.
Hey, Jason. Tom said there's no soybean rust in Mississippi.
No, I didn't say there's no soybean rust. I said there's not much. That's what I heard him say. Did I say no soybean rust?
That's what I heard.
No, there is soybean rust in Mississippi. There's only one little spot that I've seen so far.
We always got a gripe at the pathologist for soybean rust. They've been saying soybean rust since 1998.
Well, at this point, I'm a little bit more concerned about a few other things than I am that particular disease, although I don't know that we should go down that road. That'll probably offend somebody.
That's probably where your priority should be then.
I think having spent the number of days, hours, weeks, months, and miles running up and down the road looking for that particular disease, I've only seen one situation where I was terribly concerned about what that was doing from a yield loss standpoint.
So you said frog eye a while ago. Are you still sticking with that? Your number one soybean disease we need to be targeting, or is the target spot, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. You always hear about frog eye, but here lately, target spot has come on.
I think we have a couple we need to pay a little bit more attention to. I think some of those lower canopy disease issues, septoria, brown spot, target spot, are certainly picking up in incidence and severity. And I have not yet been able to wrap my mind around if that's really a change in the overall varieties that are available, or it's an environmental situation, or it's just a continuous soybean production system that maybe is playing into some of that. From a inoculum standpoint, definitely continuous soybean plays into that, because in situations where you're rotating out of soybean, put corn in for a year, cotton if you can, or rice, you cut down on the amount of septoria brown spot you have early in the season. But I would say over the last few years, septoria brown spot and target spot have certainly really made me a bit more concerned about the potential of those particular diseases, because they're things we did a good job keeping in the lower canopy. And fungicides do bring something to managing those. But from the most part, or from the biggest standpoint there, they do a good job keeping leaves on the uppermost plant canopy. They're not going to do a good job of managing a disease that's in the lowest part of the canopy. Just overall application technology, we can't get fungicides that far into the canopy down on the bottom 2 to 3 nodes with an airplane.
Hey, you said something that kind of intrigued me when you mentioned the continuous soybean system. How much do you think that in a field where it has been continuous beans for maybe a few years? I apologize.
That's just your phone talking to you, man. Why are you apologizing?
Why is she talking to me? I didn't touch it.
You said, "Hey, Siri."
No, I didn't.
Come over here, baby.
All right, so let's try that again.
No, we're going to leave that all in there. That's good.
So in a field that's been continuous soybeans, just a guess, how much do you think the evolution in the diseases that you're seeing now is a product of that versus just, you know, environment or difference in varieties or something, you know, related to the production system, but not the fact that it's been in a continuous, soybean for several years?
I think that factors into it a great deal. Now, putting an actual number on that, I don't think is really an easy thing to do. But if you take the most frog eye leaf spot susceptible variety and you plant it on virgin ground that's never been in soybeans before, you're going to end up with a ton of frog eye in that field on that particular soybean variety. Adding the continuous production system to that, I think, does factor into the amount of disease that you have at the end of the year and can certainly change the overall pathology complex within that field situation. You can end up with some of the stem diseases, stem canker, southern blight, taproot decline, any of those particular things, because it overwinters and survives on residue that remains in that field. Any of the foliar diseases can do that as well. So certainly that can factor in the production system. And that's a difficult question to answer, because environment plays into that so importantly.
Well, and I think maybe that's kind of one of the points I was thinking about. And if you think about crop rotation in what I do, you know, in weed control, what Bobby does with soil fertility, you know, if I grow continuous Roundup Ready soybeans and I spray Roundup on them and I have Palmer amaranth in that field and it's resistant, well, I'm going to have a lot more Palmer next year, and I'm going to have a lot more Palmer the year after that. And likewise with Bobby, mine and soil nutrients, you can kind of see it, and you don't really see it, but for lack of a better word, you can see it. Whereas with a disease, you know, you've got the added factor of having to have that conducive environment. So to me, it seems less predictable than it may be for a weed issue or for a fertility issue.
It is. And that's the hard part about it. You know, lots of people harp on plant pathologists about, well, you don't have a threshold to make an application on a fungicide and nobody knows what that is. And that's because the environment can skew so much of that particular disease triangle situation and when disease does occur. But any of those scenarios where you factor in a continuous production system in any crop can factor into increasing the potential losses associated with any disease, irregardless of what the environment does.
You hear it discussed relative to corn, you know, continuous corn production, can even continuous rice production, but continuous soybean production, disease management, to me, is not one of the things.
You hear a lot of people talking about.
Yeah, when you have that conversation, disease management doesn't seem to be a problem that gets discussed relative to continuous soybean production.
I would agree with that.
Interesting. I'm hungry, guys. My belly's been over here growling. Maybe that's what your phone tried to do while I go say, hey, boy, it's time to go eat something.
She's been doing that for a week, man. The Siri just pops up.
At least she didn't tell you, I can't do that, Bobby. I think we've got a hot date with a rice field tomorrow to look at some paraquat drift. What may could be disease, but fairly certain it's paraquat drift.
I looked at some plots yesterday and did, in fact, lament about the fact that, hey, look, there's some pigweed still in the alley. And then I said, oh, it's actually nice to have these here. They've done a good job indicating that paraquat has been sprayed, and everything I'm looking at isn't frog eye.
Ouch.
Frog eye doesn't get on a pigweed, is what you're saying.
That's right.
And it also doesn't get on rice.
Incredibly disease resistant.
That's correct. That's right. It'd be nice if we had a disease that would jump on those and actually do something to the plant.
Well, maybe if you find one, we'll all get rich when we vector it into that thing to kill it.
We don't want to do that.
Why?
Because we wouldn't be doing this.
We'd be doing this from the back of our yacht. All right, guys. Who knew, man? Who knew that Tom was that talented? We knew he was a great plant pathologist, and he just discussed a lot of things that we might be overlooking. But who knew that he could break out some Axl Rose on you? Like straight up, just knock it out of the park.
Hey, dude, if this pathology thing falls apart on you, I think you got some potential.
Backup Whistler?
Backup Whistler. Man, if you could play the piccolo, too, you might even break in a little Marshall Tucker band. So.
Or jazz flute. a little tall.
Okay,
tall on the side.
I think that.
All right, Tom, now we.
Tom just overextended his welcome with the jazz flute.
So, hey, guys, like any other time, man, if you need us, just give us a shout and we'll come see you as soon as possible, or call Tom if you got a disease issue.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.